All right, I'll get started. This is Golden State of Mindcast. This is Ivan, joined by Bram and Nate. We just got done watching the Raptors game this evening. My goodness, guys. It was that's as close as we've come to a loss in, well, other than Saturday, I guess, against the Nets with the overtime shot, which we could talk about too. But let's talk about the Raptors game first, since it was right on our minds. Raptors are legit.
Yeah, they totally are.
Yeah, they are. They definitely are. I mean, this is the beginning of the three games that I thought they could take a loss. Toronto, Clippers, or Chicago.
And it was one of those things where, like, a lot of people were talking about the Raptors losing over the weekend to the Kings, pretty close in Sacramento, and the Warriors coming in, super rested. We hadn't played since Saturday, so there was certainly this thought that the Warriors were going to just, you know, and the Warriors coming in off of a near loss on Saturday. So the kind of, you know, media story coming in was the Warriors are just going to cream them, and the Raptors are kind of, you know, going to be coming in limping a little bit. And that was just not the case at all tonight.
Well, I mean, it was for a second. I mean, the Warriors went on this just insane run where people were tweeting memes of Star Wars ships going into hyperdrive and talking about that was network specifically, and talking about just that the Warriors are in a different stratosphere. And Nate, even bless his heart, but Nate, you know, we were talking about trying to do this podcast, and Nate hit us all up and he was like, hey, yeah, so we can probably start around the beginning of the fourth. And I also just want to point out that it's 1:20 in the morning for me right now in New York City. I'm sitting in a dark subterranean basement hellhole in New York. But anyways, this is what we do for love of basketball. And Nate, I'm blaming this all on you because they went up huge. And I mean, they look so good. And it was insane. And I literally, I was hanging out with my wife. We were like talking, catching up. She'd been out of town for a day. And I came back down to the basement. She went to bed. And I came down to watch the rest of the game and like get my notes together. And then it was a 6-point game when I turned it on halfway through the third.
Wait, how is this my fault if you left the game altogether?
Well, because you were like, no, it's cool. We'll start at the beginning of the fourth. And I was just thinking like, all right, this is, you know, whatever.
You guys are both to blame. I think we can agree on that. That second quarter, that was like vintage Warriors where they just,
that was beautiful.
They blast off, and like, you know, it was kind of a close game. The Raptors were playing them pretty tight, and you know, they're a good team. And then all of a sudden it's just, you know, a few three pointers, a couple missed three pointers and hustle plays by Festus. I think Iguodala had one where they managed to wrestle down an offensive board and throw it back out for a three. And then suddenly they were up by, you know, 14 or whatever it was. And then, you know, the Raptors just fought back slowly but surely.
It was tied at 35 at one point, and then they went up huge. And it was just one of those runs that just it was crazy. But anyways, yeah, we don't need to harp on the good things, because there was plenty of bad stuff to talk about in this
game. Let's how did the Raptors get back in, and what were the Warriors doing wrong in that third quarter that they let them get back in, and the fourth? I mean, seriously, went down to the wire.
You know, DeRozan was pretty good in the third quarter, and I think a lot of it for DeRozan was I saw Kevin Pelton on Twitter was saying that, you know, part of it was like that was one of DeRozan's best performances, like quintessential DeRozan or peak DeRozan. And I think that's absolutely true. And I think that's where the Raptors kind of will give the team like a Warriors trouble. I mean, they will spread the court and just drive and attack and attack and attack. And without a guy like Livingston on the court to rotate in, you end up rotating in guys like Clark, who, you know, I love Ian Clark. He was great in summer league. I just like the guy. I think he's good. He has potential to be on an NBA roster for a long time. But I think in a game like tonight's and a team like Toronto, who was just really relentless and attacking the rim, it's hard to keep up with them when we're missing a guy like Livingston. And they shot 65% in that quarter. So DeRozan was 4-for-7. I mean, so it was just a lot of attacking. That's what you saw at the end of the game as well. You know, Lowry kind of made some bonehead plays, but they, DeRozan with that, he had a drive like I think in the last minute or so, which was just, you know, taking it hard at two guys to the rim through whatever contact they gave him. And That's a tough thing to guard no matter who you're playing. I think in the end, the Warriors just have Steph Curry and the Raptors don't.
Yeah, I was impressed by Valanciunas too.
Yeah,
I thought that
is nice.
You know, I mean, something that we have that a lot of teams that don't have necessarily is Ezeleon Bogut to really be that just tough force in the paint. And there were times, I mean, Ezeli did have that one great play where he subbed in after Bogut picked up his third foul. I think it was in the second, like right before they went on that run, and immediately blocked Valanciunas' shot and then blocked it again. But other than that, I mean, Valanciunas had a pretty solid game, and he's a really exciting prospect for sure for a 23-year-old. And that team is very interesting. And I know Paul Flannery just wrote like a long piece about hanging out with him. But
anyways. One thing I'll say about Valanciunas is, you know, offensively he works really hard, and defensively he might work hard as well, but The Warriors were, you know, hitting on those lobs to Ezeli and to Bogut, and you know, a little higher frequency perhaps than usual. And I was watching Valanciunas just completely get lost on help defense, and he would overhelp a little bit, hang out right under the basket basically, and turn his head as soon as some guy got, you know, some guy was driving on one side and you know, was getting lost on the other side. It seems like he's super talented, but is it maybe his head just doesn't get the defensive schemes yet? He's only 23, which kind of bugs.
Yeah, he's 23. So he just has like such a, his body is so NBA dominant, you know, that, I mean, that, I guess that's mostly what I'm going off of, is just, he looks like he belongs.
Yep.
And I'm sure he'll figure it out at a certain point. I mean, you know, he's younger than the majority of the people in the league. So, but I think that the end of that game, I mean, Jesus, we're all just watching it, just hoping that they don't lose first and foremost, but then just amazed that they had, you know, climbed and crawled their way back into the game. But I mean, just, it was such an ending. And then those boneheaded plays by Lowry, like you talked about, going for two when they needed a three, and just throwing up a wild shot and losing the ball and throwing the ball out of bounds a couple times, and
the foul, I mean, on Iguodala,
the foul on Iguodala,
wasn't a foul on Iguodala. I watched the replay right after. You saw Iguodala pulling one of those elbow hook moves on Lowry. I don't know who had who, but it certainly looked like he might have duped the refs a little bit.
Veteran savvy,
yeah.
It's okay. It's okay if you call it veteran savvy. Then everything's fine.
I mean, you know, you call it what you want. I think that nobody comes away from this game being pleased with the officiating, which is also hilarious because I'm assuming you guys were watching on CSN Bay Area.
Yeah.
So like Fitz, they went really out of their way to make a point that all of the calls had been the right calls. But then you saw Barbosa and Walton both get teed up. You saw Casey almost get teed up on the Toronto side. You, like, all those fouls that happened. I mean, it was an ugly game going down the stretch where there was no offensive flow. There was no momentum. Yeah. And seemingly that played into the Raptors' hands. But I don't know. That was just a strange game. And then also the whole, like, hack of Bogut. And I was tweeting with that dude, the Shrillist, on Twitter. And we were just talking about, like, how rare is it that the Warriors are in a position to – have Haka Bogut be an option, you know, that they're within the amount of points that it even makes sense.
Yeah.
So it's just a strange game one that we're not accustomed to, which again is just getting back to what a great season it's been so far, you know, that we're like, oh, they had to, you know, really pulled that one out. But, you know, they still did. They still did pull it out.
Looking at the stats, Warriors ended up shooting 54% to 47% from the Raptors. So they had the advantage there. You know, 11 of 29 on threes, no problem there. 18 of 27 on free throws certainly was a problem. Shot 27 free throws to the Raptors, 39. The one problem that, I mean, the Raptors had 18 turnovers, but the Warriors did have 20 turnovers. And that's kind of one of those things. Every so often, the Warriors have these big turnover games, and haven't been as consistent as probably Luke Walton and Steve Kerr would like, taking care of the ball. What did you guys think was contributing to that tonight?
You know, I always attribute it to overconfidence with the Warriors. Like Draymond Green said at the end of the game, they weren't forced by anything. I mean, they were just silly turnovers. You know, Steph Curry dribbling the ball off his foot, forcing passes in traffic, driving into traffic with no options, jumping in the air with no options. I mean, they were just things where they were in a groove early in the game, and I think they get in these modes where they're just like, well, we can do anything because we're the Warriors and we're invincible. And I think that's where those kind of just really careless, silly turnovers happen. You kind of want to disregard it, but it's like, this has been like the bugaboo. We just won a championship. We're 12-0 now. But the one thing that has kind of like gone from the Jackson era all the way to now is these ridiculous turnovers. And I don't really have a clear answer. And honestly, like, people keep asking them about these turnovers, and I don't think they have a real answer for it. I mean, I think it's just a collective kind of careless confidence, kind of carefree thing that works for them when they're flowing. But when they're not flowing and a team mucks it up like the Raptors did in the second half, I think it just works against them to be so carefree and loose with the ball.
Well, and I think, too, that a big part of that is that last year they would get into these crazy, transcendent, otherworldly sort of modes, and they would just start blowing people out. And people were so surprised by that that they didn't know what to do, and they just folded.
Yeah.
And people aren't surprised anymore.
Yeah. You know?
Like, the Warriors are the champions of the world. And so not only are they not surprised by those transcendent quarters, like the second quarter tonight, but they're actively anticipating them, and then they're fighting back. And like, we saw it in the Timberwolves game the other day, and we saw it tonight, where, you know, people take a lot of pride against playing the champion hard, because you always measure yourself against the best. And right now the Warriors are the best. I mean, by every single metric that exists under sky and God, you know, they're so far beyond everybody, every other team, that these teams are coming at them with everything they have. And like, the Raptors are going to be sore tomorrow, you know, like they're going to really feel it, but at least they know that they went toe to toe with the champs, you know? And I think that's something that the Warriors are still learning how to compensate for or deal with, is that when they do hit their zone or their peak or whatever, is that then that the teams are not, they're not snow blinded by that anymore. Yeah. You know, like they're not just gazing at this unstoppable force and just being completely at a loss. They really are coming back hard, because it's, you know, because everybody, you make it to the NBA, you have a lot of pride, you know, and these teams are just not, I mean, especially against the champs, they're just not going to fold.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's also really early in the season. We don't really know how other teams are going to adapt to the Warriors, and frankly, how the Warriors are going to adapt. I mean, we saw this a little bit last year. Early in the season, they were definitely sloppy with the ball, and were still kind of implementing Steve Kerr's offense and getting used to the crazy ball movement that they certainly hadn't had under Mark Jackson. And so it'll be interesting to see if the Warriors evolve past that as well, to the point where they can kind of put up a better front, whether it's by personnel or by scheme, when the teams do make that secondary push after they've inevitably gone down by 15. It seems like that's almost inevitable.
If other bloggers listen to our podcast, they're just going to hate us.
Well, I mean, they will hate. Funny. You know what? We're 12-0. I mean, of course they're going to hate us.
I want Ryan to listen to this from Fear the Sword.
Like, I'm going to send this. Ryan on. Ryan needs.
We
to
need,
come
dude.
On
we do need to have Ryan on. For those of everybody listening, Ryan Morton, I believe is how you pronounce his last name, is a fantastic writer, great blogger, and sort of head of like social media for Fear the Sword. Who we Nate and I. And Sam Sorkin as well, befriended in a very awesome, beautiful way in Vegas during Summer League. But he's just this irascible, like, you know, 20-year-old old man. I mean, he's older than 20, but like, he's just and lover of Fireball. And I don't know why I'm talking about him right now, but I want him to just feel our like gloating and just. Happiness at how, you know, we're struggling to come up with bad things to say about the Warriors, and I feel like he would hate us for that, and I would love him for hating us for that.
And I feel bad about saying something like this to a Cleveland fan who, you know Cleveland fans historically have gotten the short end, except for with the Cavs, but You know, we struggled as Warriors fans for so long that, you know, it kind of feels like, oh, we get to gloat now. Like, oh, I'm going to, I don't care. I don't care what other people think. I'm so happy.
Well, what was it? Nate, best, you tweeted, yeah, Nate, you tweeted something during the game that was just like, this whole season just feels like a celebration of the surreal or something.
The celebration of the end of misery.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
It does. I mean, it's just like, what are we, we've been so... we've been in misery so long, and I mean, part of it is like I'm still in complete disbelief that this is happening at all. So yeah. It's really like I don't know. I mean, so look, I mean, I know some Warriors fans. Some of us are getting annoying. I look on Twitter, I'm like, wow, some of these Warriors fans are blockable at this point. But at the same time, like, what do people want us to say? They're undefeated. I mean, they're undefeated, and they're just demolishing teams until they seem to get bored. I mean, I always feel that they get these big leads and then they're bored. They were probably bored from the beginning of the Brooklyn game. And it's just like, what are we as fans supposed to do with that? Start picking apart lobs. I can't do that.
To that end. And I know this is something that you wanted to talk about. Let's look forward and think about the next couple games. I mean, do they have a chance to go to 16-0 and break that record set by the Rockets, or what are we thinking?
So looking ahead, so first tough. On Thursday, yeah. We have the Clippers. Friday, we have the Bulls on a second of a back-to-back coming from L.A. And then a Sunday at Denver. So, I mean, you know, the Clippers are always a fun game, usually a tough game. What are you guys seeing from that matchup coming up on Thursday?
Well... if Paul and Redick are out, or if just Chris Paul is out, I mean, I don't know that the Clippers can keep up. But I mean, I just think, you know, Paul's amazing. If Paul's on the floor, you know, I really believe he's one of those players who's a game changer. Not, you know, personal opinion, not as much as Steph Curry, but I mean, Paul can certainly. He almost tried to win a game by himself last game. I think their rotations were just so screwy. But if he's out, I mean, that's.
Hold on, Nate. You don't have faith in Austin Rivers to replace Chris Paul?
I try not to. I'm not going to be as harsh as some GSOM commenters on Austin Rivers, but let's just say it's not the same effect on the floor. So, I mean, that all hinges on that. And, you know, they're at home, though. So, you know, the Clippers and Warriors have, you know, this is genuine hatred. It's gotten to that point now. It's nice. I like that. So, you know, anything could happen there, but without Paul, that's a win. And yes, I'm going to jinx it, Bram.
Oh man.
I've been jinxing games. Like, so I won't divulge the extent to which
I'm going to divulge. The extent.
No, don't divulge that.
The ultimate. I was just saying that I'm going to report him to Raymond. Little man, this is bad. It's bad. It's bad. You've gotten obsessed with the gloat, man.
I have.
You know? I mean, listen, we're riding it while it lasts, and it's fun. And at a certain point, they're going to lose, and it's not going to be anything to do with any of us, you know, although it will still be your fault, Nate. But
okay, thanks. Appreciate that.
I mean, you know, you look at tonight's game, and again, like, anything can happen. And I think especially with Clippers, like, it's just such a I'm searching for words that aren't expletives. Such a great rivalry. such a fantastic match. That, you know, I mean, literally anything can happen. And those dudes hate the Warriors. They hate each other. I mean, Bogut, like, what are the chances that Bogut and Blake end up just scowling at each other with their knuckles bloody? You know, like, it's probably 97% or something like that, you know? And so I just think that anything can happen. And you look at a game like tonight, or you look at the Brooklyn game, I mean, the Warriors been cutting it close. And so, I mean, I'm definitely on the, I'm feeling that it's going to happen sooner than later.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure if it's going to happen in the Clips game. It could also happen in the Chicago game.
But. Yeah, the Clips game is scary because it always is a little bit in large part because we just don't want to lose to them. Like, that's just the worst thing ever when we lose to the Clippers. But, you know, Chris Paul being out and you know, he's lost a step Usually I would agree with you that that's in our favor, but that's basically putting the ball into Blake Griffin's hands, like just the entire game. And I think we can all agree that Blake Griffin has eclipsed Chris Paul as the best player on that Clippers team. And you know, he's a guy that, especially if Draymond is still, you know, aching a little bit from the flu, and Bogut is still coming back a little bit. I mean, he didn't have much of a game today with a lot of fouls. It could be tough if Blake goes off and you know, has that kind of luxury and leeway to do whatever he wants in the court.
And I think if
I appreciate your healthy fear of the Clips. My problem is that without Chris Paul, they also lose a defender. You know, and you gotta defend the Warriors perimeter somehow. And if the Warriors go small against them again, they're gonna really struggle to defend the perimeter without Paul. Because then you're talking about throwing, like you said, Austin Rivers, Jamal Crawford out there to defend somebody for pretty long periods of time. And I think that's where they would run into trouble without him. But I hear you. I mean, Blake is, I think we should probably spend like a whole podcast giving Blake some credit, because I've hated on him for years. And he's gotten to the point where it's like, even if you hate the guy, you can't hate on him for too much. I mean, he's doing an amazing thing. So
I would like to do a whole podcast on, like, are we just biased as Warriors fans, or are the Clippers and the Houston Rockets like actually deplorable basketball teams that employ people who are like really easy to hate on? Cause it's not just us, man. And like, you look at Harden and Dwight and like all these people, and they have their attitudes. And I mean, I'm actually like a big Blake fan, but I just think that, like, I wonder how much of that is just us being, you know, asshole Golden State fans, and how much of that is actually just, you know, because for whatever reason, like, people get a certain rap, like the Clippers complain too much, you know, or Houston flops or whatever, you know. But
I don't know, anecdotally it seems like maybe it's just Draymond Green and other Warriors players that are saying this, but they'll play the Clippers, and then they come on either before or after the game, and they say, you know, everybody else hates him too. It's not just us. Like, you know, we have no problem with the Grizzlies. We have no problem with the Spurs, but you know, they all have problems with the Clippers. I don't know if that's you know, if they're actually talking to him about that, you know, behind the scenes, or, you know, it's also a little bit in the media right now. The Clippers are considered kind of a villain team.
Right. I know, but I guess that's my question, is like, how much of that is a media creation, and how much of that comes from like Doc Rivers and comes down from the top, or from Ballmer or whoever, the owner?
Yeah, they're all terrible. See, this is a no brainer.
So anyway, so what about that Chicago game, huh?
Well, let's see, looking at Chicago, as usual, having a great defensive year, third in opponents, effective field goal percentage. You know, they're kind of carrying over even in the Hoiberg era, of the tip of the, defense, but their lineups are a little weird this year. You know, you've had Joakim Noah coming off the bench. You've had Mirotić, you know, starting with Pau Gasol. I know that there's some thoughts among some that it's a strange matchup that they have the two offensive bigs, starting, and the two defensive bigs with Taj Gibson as well, coming off the bench. But, you know, it's pretty much worked out for them pretty well so far. Fifth in the league in defense, but 26th in the league in offense, even though they have their two offensive bigs starting. Is there anything that calls out to you guys about the Bulls that are different this year, or anything that, in their matchups against the Warriors?
I'm really excited for, well, theoretically, the Clay versus, Jimmy Butler matchup. You know, if Clay was healthy, I feel like that's definitely those are two of the more exciting two guards in the league, on both sides of the ball. And then obviously, but again, depending on health on Derrick Rose's side, yeah. I mean, theoretically the backcourt matchup is like the best that I can think of off the top of my head, if everybody's healthy and playing at the top of the game. But then again, like, Clay's been off, and obviously D Rose has been off for years now. So, I don't know. I mean, it's funny, cause you think about Chicago as being this team of everybody's super huge, you know, like Joakim Noah and Gasol and Mirotić, and everybody seems like they're 6'11" plus, you know, but yet, you know, it is the play of their guards and drive and kick and a lot of that stuff that drives their system. But you never know what you're getting with them, you know, with health. So I don't know. I mean, we'll see how it all plays out.
Yeah, I think Chicago's just another team that could, like you're saying about the bigs, Ivan and Bram, just how big they are. I think a lot of it is this is a team that could muck it up on us, make it a kind of, they can make it if they wanted to, sort of a slower game, try to slow down the game. Their pace is up there, you know, 12th in the league. It's not like they're a team that's really slow, but I think they could, you know, this is a team that has that ability to make it a physical game that are the types of games that have in the last few years bothered the Warriors. Now, whether that means they beat them is another story, but just like we said against Memphis, when Memphis kind of clawed back into the game on the other night, I mean, it's just one of those things that you could easily bother the Warriors and take them out of their rhythm by banging them up a little. And Chicago has the tools to do that. I think it relies a lot of, you need to be a full strength to beat the Warriors. You're not going to beat them without a Derrick Rose. No matter what we say about Derrick Rose and how much he's fallen from MVP level, you're not going to beat the Warriors without a player of his caliber. And it is going to matter. That's going to matter significantly, I think. But yeah, I think the loss could come like at any time just from burnout. Yeah, I could totally see it. We almost saw it against Brooklyn. Yeah, I mean, that's a team that we shouldn't have been in the game, and they were right there and took them to overtime.
Yeah, so. And that Bulls game is like a high probability or possibility for burnout coming out on the heels of the Clippers game and playing a super high defensive team like the Bulls. I mean, they've got not much of an offense rolling at the moment. Players aren't shooting very well, and if the Warriors can continue to play defense, they're always going to have a shot, but you're right. Like that's one to worry about just over the fact that it's a, you know, second of a back-to-back coming home off of the road.
Yeah. I'm calling it now, man. I'm looking at the calendar. I mean, which we've been looking at, but so Clippers back-to-back, Bulls, and then Nuggets on Sunday, November 22nd. And then the Lakers at Warriors on Tuesday, November 24th, which I'm actually going to go to. So I'm just going to call it now and say that which the Lakers game would be the potential 16th game, and they're going to lose that game because I'm going to be there, and then I'm going to take full blame, Nate. And it won't be your fault.
Thank you so much.
And
I really,
I'm
going to
just
that.
Step in and just not dodge that bullet. And it's going to be on my shoulders, and I apologize
fall
to all
on that sword, bro.
All the Dubs fall on that sword. Faithful, like ahead of time. Yeah.
I hope that if they do lose to the Lakers, it's one of those games where they rest all of their starters. And just like it's a scheduled loss, just
that would be like such high quality trolling, as if they have the chance to set the record and Walton just sits everybody. It's just like Ian Clark for every single of the minutes,
and it'll be Steve Kerr's first game back.
He'll
just channel his Popovich and say, I don't really need to coach this game. This is my first game back. Forget this, guys. You Lakers, you can have it. You need a win,
right? And then in the post game, say now we can get on with our season.
Yeah, on to the next one, which is Suns on Friday the 27th, the day after Thanksgiving. So time for a new winning streak to start that day.
12-0 right now.
I'm sorry, Bram. That is the cockiest thing that was said on this whole podcast. sorry, it's way too smug. Go ahead.
No, I'm just here trying to end the podcast so that Bram can get some sleep. But he's too busy. You know, he's mocking all these other teams. I think we need, see, at this point, we need a loss for the humility. Like, just for the humility.
We need a loss so that we can talk about something else, man. Like, if we lose to the Lakers, it's going to be painful because I'm going to be at the game. But you know what? You need diversity, you know? You can't have a bunch of, like, random people walking around all wearing, like, American Apparel and, you know, reading Dostoevsky all the time. You gotta switch it up sometimes.
You know, and in true Warriors fan form, as soon as they lose, especially if they lose to the Lakers, the sky is going to be falling. You got to look at the coach. Maybe, like, Kerr really needs to come.
And as Nate always says, like, troll harder or not at all, you know? Yeah. And so, like, dude, if they lose to the Lakers, I'll be so happy because it'll just bring out all the crazies, and then we can just know who they are, and then we can block them all. It's gonna be great.
Let's finish it up though. It's late. Bram needs to get some sleep. We'll be back soon on Golden State of Mindcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or whatever your other, you know, podcasting solutions are. Go to blogtalkradio.com and you can check us out there. You can check out a bunch of other SB Nation podcasts as well, blogtalkradio.com/SB Nation. There's a whole bunch of them you probably don't know about that. A lot of teams are putting their own voices on the air as well. So check them out, and we hope to have on some of those hosts on our own show pretty soon, previewing and recapping games. So we'll talk to them, and we'll talk to you next time.